DW.
Ayu Peter is sewing a traditional Inuit coat for her granddaughter. She carefully stitches together an oversized hood with her fingers hardened and cracked from the work. In the 35 years she's lived in Canada's Arctic, she says she's witnessed the sea ice changing.
Hunters that used to hunt from 1981 and to this day, seasoned hunters are falling through the ice, and they shouldn't. The water is becoming more accessible much sooner, and then it forms later.
Aluminum boats dot Iqaluit's beach, a community so known for its Arctic char, the name translates into many fish. Earlier this month, an icebreaker cleared the way through Frobisher Bay, and lifelong hunters like Solomon Awa are now anxious to get on the water. For them, hunting culture is important, passed down from generation to generation.
People start teaching their child to go to school at age 5. And I started going out hunting, not really hunting, but helping out and going out with my dad at age 5.
Long a nomadic culture, Inuit have survived on walrus, narwhal, seals, and fish. Nunavut is Canada's most northern territory, and very little grows on the rugged tundra. Each of its 25 communities are accessible only by airplane for most of the year. Longer open water seasons could mean a big boost to the economy with an increase to marine traffic. But it could also mean an upset to the delicate ecosystem Inuit rely on. In Clyde River, Isakilak hunts to put food on the table.
Anything that has lungs, pretty much, even char, you name it, I've probably hunted it here in the Arctic.
What he doesn't eat, he shares with elders and anyone who needs it. That's important because food insecurity in Canada's Arctic is at a crisis level. Basic necessities cost up to 3 times more than what they cost in the south. During the winter, when all the food is flown in, a head of cauliflower or a carton of juice can cost more than 10 Canadian dollars or about 7 euros. A bag of grapes could be double that. But catching caribou or seal means a full freezer and a pelt that can be used for clothing.
It's our country food. It's something we grew up on. Something that you can't replace with a store-bought food.
Researchers at the National Snow and Ice Data Center track changes to sea ice using satellite images. The data shows a steep rate of decline, which has accelerated over the past decade. And the changes cannot be explained by weather patterns. The evidence points to a climatic shift. Trevor Taylor is a policy director with Oceans North. He says the high seas area, far away from communities, has seen some of the most dramatic change.
Human memory, human history, this ice cover predates it. And in our lifetime, it'll go from that to a possibility of very little and perhaps even no sea ice cover in the height of summer.
With no regulation to stop it, Taylor says someone, probably within his lifetime, will sail a fishing vessel into that delicate area.
And they will probably catch fish. There's a strong probability that they would overfish. And it's really hard to say then what would happen after that.
But scientists say there are animals who are already feeling the effect of sea ice decline. Polar bears seem to be getting thinner as their hunting platforms shrink. Seals need snow and ice to give birth, and some researchers say pups have drowned when the ice breaks up before they're weaned.
But right now it's a very healthy population.
Ayu Peter argues that environmentalists are exaggerating the issue. The artist is also an activist and has been fighting against the European Union's ban on seal products for years. She says the seal population has been booming since that ban was put in place, and saying otherwise only hurts Inuit hunters.
They have the highest rate of food insecurity. They have the highest rate of unemployment. We have the highest cost of living. So when you add all those things together and then you're not able to make money out of the seal to buy gas and ammunition, it has been devastating. I don't think the Europeans recognize how devastating it has been for our communities.
Peter hopes to use the changes to sea ice to her advantage. More and more cruise ships are visiting the Arctic, and for the past several years, she's worked as an Inuit cultural guide.
Tourism has grown with foreign ships from Europe coming directly to Nunavut and then sailing. I think it's a humongous opportunity that we are not developing.
But with economic opportunity comes potential environmental peril. Ship traffic has doubled over the last decade, but Canada has mapped only a small portion of Arctic waters.
You know, these areas are extremely remote. Even when you're in a community or close to a community, there's limited capacity to be able to help you if you get in trouble. Search and rescue is practically non-existent. The infrastructure is needed, but even then, you know, you can put a whole lot of infrastructure for search and rescue and oil spill containment and whatnot, and you can very easily find yourself somewhere where you are a long way away from that capacity.
Looking out at Iqaluit's waters provides an instant reminder of the potential danger. Emblazoned with the words, "no smoking," a tanker ship floats in wait to deliver this year's fuel.
If one of them spills all that oil, it's going to be devastating for the community that is closest and for their animals. They're going to be so hungry.
I don't know if there's a right one here.
Today, Awa's biggest concern is fixing his boat. He says he won't believe any doomsday scenarios, and regardless of the changes to the ice cover, he believes Inuit will adapt.
I don't really believe that it's going to be difficult for a traditional way of hunting. We just follow with the flow. If it doesn't freeze up till January, we still go out boating. We still go hunting in a traditional way.
For Deutsche Welle, I'm Elise Skura in Iqaluit, Nunavut.
And go boarding.
This report was brought to you by DW.